listening to New England Climate Conversations, the podcast all about the impacts of climate change and how we can make a difference. I'm your host, Owen, and I'm joined by my co-hosts, Dean, Luna, and Corbin. On this episode, we'll be talking about global degrees of warming and what effects we expect to see above certain thresholds, the impact of a changing climate on tourism in Maine, and the relationship between climate change and mental health. First, let's get into our weekly Climate Bites. For those tuning in for the first time, Climate Bites is our rapid-fire segment about recent major climate events. I'll turn it over to Luna to start.
Floods associated with Storm Babet have dealt extensive damage to agriculture and human life. Babet, which formed on the 14th of October, hit parts of Europa, with England suffering the most damage. The storm affected commodity crops such as potatoes and cereals. Flash floods have rendered some fields fallow and others with lower projected yields. Some of the lands are not inaccessible. This has produced a cascade of food shortages and price increases. Almost 2,000 properties have suffered flooding. A few dozen dead are reported. The conditions are a sign of more volatility to come with climate change, as flooding injects unreliability into food systems of England and beyond. Over to you, Corbin.
Melting ice caps are inevitable at this point, says scientists. Since the 1970s, the Western Antarctica ice caps have been being watched, and scientists have noticed that it has melted by almost 90% of its original mass. That's almost 13% each decade. Research indicates that regardless of the actions we take to combat it, we simply are too late. We waited too long to do anything about it, and now it is out of our control. The ice caps are expected to be gone by the end of the century, raising the global sea level to 23 feet higher than it currently is. And now I'll hand it over to Owen.
Thanks, Corbin. On September 10th of this year, Storm Daniel hit Libya, causing strong winds and heavy rainfall, leading to extreme flooding. The flooding resulted in more than 4,000 confirmed deaths and over 10,000 more missing, an unprecedented level of destruction for the country. While a study conducted soon after estimated that such a disaster in Libya is a 1 in 300 to 1 in 600 year event, they also noted that this is about 50 times more likely than such an event occurring during pre-industrial times due to the Earth's climate having warmed 1.2 degrees Celsius since then. They also note that the storm was up to 50% more intense than it would have been before this level of warming, and we can't expect things to get better if the climate continues warming the way that it has been. All right, now I'll pass it off to Dean.
Thanks, Owen. So, in other news, scientists, the past several months, years if we're being honest, have expressed grave concern about the collapse of the Atlantic Meridional Overturning Circulation, more commonly known by the much more digestible acronym AMOC. The AMOC, which circulates about 15 million cubic meters of water a second, starts and ends near Greenland, and passes through all four major oceans of the world, is set to collapse between 2025 and 2095 with 95% certainty, according to a study from Nature Communications. Some of the effects of this can include stronger storms on the east coast of the U.S., where New England Climate Conversations is based, a mini ice age in Europe, sea level rise in coastal cities, and an expansion of southern glaciers and ice pack, as well as significant global ecosystem disruption. While the full effects aren't immediately clear, it appears that, unfortunately, humanity will be experiencing them sooner rather than later, and the only strategy that can be taken is one of mitigation. And piggybacking off of that lovely climate bite about the AMOC, I'm going to be discussing what degree changes really mean, you know, what degrees of warming specifically means. So there's a lot of debate and discussion about what sort of changes you can be expected to see with these kinds of temperature changes. The number you'll hear a lot is that you have to prevent 1.5 degrees Celsius, 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit, before pre-industrial levels, but it isn't explained why very well a lot of the time. Humans are already at 1.2 degrees of Celsius above, according to the most recent IPCC report, and that's the Intergovernmental Panel for Climate Change, if you don't know. But anyway, at 1.5 degrees Celsius, you'll see about 70% of coral reefs die with their loss of biodiversity. We're already experiencing this to an extent. That also means 6% of insects, 8% of vertebrates, and 4% of plants will see their climate-determined geographic range cut in half. At 2 degrees Celsius, this jumps to 99% of coral reefs, and 18% of insects, 16% of vertebrates, and 8% of plants, respectively. The impact on things like human agriculture is immediately obvious. Everyone talks about keeping the bees happy and healthy. Well, what if the bees, who are already having trouble, go extinct because of 1.5 or 2 degrees Celsius warming? Humanity as a whole, especially on the governmental level, seems to be refusing to get their act together to prevent either 1.5 or 2 degrees Celsius. This means no honey, no flower pollination, loss of further biodiversity that way. It's a bad situation. And while we're talking about that, maybe we should go further. I mean, hell, we're expecting 1.5 degrees Celsius by 2027. Humans are already falling woefully short of climate goals, according to standards set by the Paris Climate Accord and the IPCC thresholds. We could be expecting up to 4 degrees Celsius warming by the 2060s. Let's go over a bit of what that could entail. Hey, can we pull up that graph from the earlier IPCC report? Thanks. So what do we have here? Well, we have people exposed to increased water stress, hundreds of millions, if not billions. We have more drought and decreased water availability in semi-arid regions and lower latitudes. That means possible, if not likely, wars over water. Okay. You have ecosystems changing and weakening due to increased pressures, with somewhere from 30% species extinction rate at 1.5 to 3 degrees Celsius from widespread global extinctions at 4 to 5 degrees Celsius. Of course, we have near total death of coral systems and their ecosystems, again, already happening. You have a variety of complex, localized changes for fisheries and farmers, including decrease in cereal productivities everywhere, starting from 3.5 degrees Celsius, with decreases in low latitude starting at about 2.5 degrees Celsius. And you can already see this with lower crop yields globally, something that we'll be going into in more detail on a later episode. Then you have the global increase in floods, more frequent and more severe natural disasters. Somewhere around 30% of global coastal wetlands lost at 3 degrees Celsius, not to mention the increase in total damage from all floods and storms. Last but certainly not least, you have changing distribution of disease vectors. Here in Maine, for example, shorter winters and warmer, earlier springs have led to an increase in tick populations and Lyme disease. Globally, this is also going to include more malnutrition, infectious diseases, cardiopulmonary ailments, increased mortality from heat waves, floods, droughts, and extreme weather in general, which themselves, by the way, will cause a huge burden on health services. Especially in a place like the U.S., this will lead to a much greater burden on an already generally ineffective healthcare system and more medical bankruptcies per year. So you see, this issue is really multifaceted. I mean, yeah, we're based out of Maine, which is part of New England, but there isn't a location on this entire planet that won't be affected by it. I mean, you have all the recent floods and storms, like that huge one in Vermont that we covered in a previous climate bite that displaced something like 2 million people. You have the floods, the earthquake, and the wildfires that hit California in late August of this year, 2023. You have the warming in the Gulf of Maine that's causing a temporary boom in the lobster population, which is driving prices down and displacing a lot of fishermen who fish within 3 miles of the coast. Later, that's going to lead to a population decline of all lobsters, and then you have a real problem, because 80% of Maine's seafood industry is based off of lobster, and again, we talked about that in a previous episode, so go back and watch that. And I'm really not trying to be all doom and gloom here, but this is a real serious issue that gets understated a lot. And understating and ignoring the problems, just slowly plodding along, is kind of what got us into this climate mess in the first place. And with that, I'm going to pass it off to Luna to talk about how climate change is going to impact the tourist industry.
Are you ready for a longer summer season for tourists? How about coming up for a visit around hurricanes and furious storms? Up next on New England Climate Conversations, tourism in Maine. How it is changing the way we recreate in the Pine Tree State. The state's summer season, dotted with lobster pound visits, the beautiful green scenery, and the familiar blaring of cruise ship horns, is shaping up to grow longer and potentially more prosperous for many of the industries that depend on the swelling of seasonal visitors. How is climate change changing the way we have fun on holiday in Maine? Tourism is big business, and part of what makes Maine, Maine. Tourism brings in over $6.2 billion annually, and supplies over 100,000 jobs, according to the University of Maine. Whether you groan when the out-of-state plays start pouring in come May, or you delight in the active dynamism of the tourism season, it's hard to deny that we are looking at changing tides. One aspect to study is the lengthening of the summer season. The summers are growing more humid and warmer, and the season is starting to encroach upon the shoulder seasons. The shoulder seasons are known as the period about 1 to 2 months before and after the summer season, which bridges the winters to the rest of the year. The activities and overall mood are different in each shoulder season, late spring and early fall, and the state sees swells of tourists in particular moments. The summer season with its accompanying activities can envelop the shoulder season's recreational activities. In other words, school and work calendars aside, visitors can enjoy boat tours and lobster rolls well into the fall and as the last snow starts to melt. First off, how are summers themselves looking now? Not only are they longer, but they are wetter. The Maine Climate Office has noted that at least more than 6 inches on average per year compared to 1985. Precipitation events, discrete events, are 10 to 15 times higher compared to the previous century. Maine statewide annual mean temperature is 3 degrees Fahrenheit higher than previous decades. The chilly and vibrant Maine winter season, rife with winter excursions, ice fishing, and snow athletics, is set to gradually shorten and fizzle out. A higher emission scenario puts the Maine winters as nearly halving within a few generations. Much more of this precipitation, set to increase, will come as rain rather than snow, in a report put forth by the Union of Concerned Scientists. A lower emission scenario posits a model in which Maine largely retains its snow season. Currently, Maine is set to be the only area in the Northeast to support an economically viable ski industry. Snowmobiling, which contributes over $3 billion to the regional economy, is set to lose much-loved trails and facilities because of snowmelt. 20 cities in Maine have been associated with dangers of high levels of sea level rise, risking habitat and infrastructure. Some of these towns, like Booth Bay, stand to lose 20 to 30% of their land area. We're talking streets damaged and destroyed, houses flooded and unable to be retrofitted to withstand an encroaching coastline, wildlife suffering their loss of their homes. The Gulf of Maine is warming up faster than most of the world's bodies of water. The Natural Resources Council of Maine puts that number at 99% bodies of water. A 2017 report from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration showed low-level sea rise scenarios that predict at least 6 inches of sea level rise by 2050, whereas extreme scenarios suggest the sea level rise could rise by as much as 2 feet by 2050. By 2100, the same report shows between 1 and 8 feet of sea level rise. Storm surges in frequency could be devastating on coastal towns and industry, particularly those who are looking at diminishing coastlines. Visitors spent $1.7 billion at Maine beaches in 2018. Dry beach area will be decreasing by 43% with just 1.6 feet of sea level rise, resulting in 1.1 million fewer visitors within this region and $136 million loss in annual tourism spending. The impact of Maine's tourism industry is difficult to conceive of at this moment, but picture this: your favorite hike's completely submerged, a favorite restaurant having to close its doors for good, iconic scenic views forever changed. This is only one part of a deep dive in rising sea levels, as well as other climate change impacts on Maine's tourism livelihood.
In our podcast, we have talked about how climate change affects our wildlife as well as their habitats, and we have touched a little on how it could affect us via worsening weather and illness. But did you know climate change can also have an effect on our mental health? Climate change can have an effect on employment, which can cause mental distress. Due to the potential life-threatening disasters caused by climate change, we can see disorders such as PTSD, depression, anxiety, grief, major depressive disorder, survivor's guilt, substance abuse, and even suicide. All of these can be caused by extreme heat and cold associated with climate change, as well as the natural disasters like flooding, forest fires, droughts, and heavy precipitation. Climate change is also associated with a decrease in quality of life, further increasing mental distress and/or strain, destruction, loss, and displacement of people, causing these kinds of mental illnesses to sprout and grow, even if you aren't directly affected by climate disasters going on in the U.S. You are still prone to feel mental distress and a decline in the quality of life. Witnessing things such as floods, wildfires, displacement, destruction of your home or others, loss of others, and the damage to the environment can cause mental issues that we see through a vast majority of the United States population. Though not all of them are directly associated with climate change, it certainly can influence an individual's mind simply by witnessing such a thing. Witnessing or being involved in a natural disaster caused by climate change is not the only way you can be affected. Have you ever felt a depression or a sense of anxiety when thinking about climate change? If you do or you have, you may be experiencing mental distress due to climate change in the world today, and you are not alone. More than two-thirds of the adult population in the USA, roughly 68%, have reported feeling at least some anxiety when it comes to climate change. Natural disasters are not the only way you can be affected mentally by climate change. The increase and decrease in seasonal temperature, hotter and colder summers and winters, can influence mental illness, as an increase in temperature has been linked to memory problems, decrease in attention and reaction times, and sleeping difficulties, all which are perfect conditions for mental illnesses to sprout in the human mind. Decreases in temperature, especially in the winter, have been associated with major depressive disorder, MDD, anxiety, and seasonal affective disorder, SAD. Individuals with pre-existing mental illnesses are especially susceptible to mental illness connected to an increase or decrease in temperature, as some mental illness can worsen by themselves with the changes in the temperature or because of the medication a person is on. Some medications like antidepressants and antipsychotics can affect the way an individual's body regulates its heat, leaving them more vulnerable to the changes. So, what can we do to help decrease the threat climate change poses to mental health? Well, there's a few things. Firstly, we could have more support for people at risk. We already know a good portion of the population here in America has some form of mental illness, so having a support system for when things get really bad, whether it be mental issues associated with climate change or mental illness in general, making treatment models and plans visible and open to the public could give help and give some calmness to people, decrease potential mental distress, and provide structured help for those currently suffering. What we really need to see is an increase in action to address climate change. Climate change in general being addressed could help ease people's minds. Having a plan and partaking in activities to combat climate change is one of the many things we can do for ourselves, not only to help our mental health, but also help the Earth. With this, we could also further increase our research and evaluation of climate change. Putting more study into it can give us a better understanding of climate change and its effects on humans and the Earth, and the potential actions we could take to help those suffering mentally from the climate change and the natural disasters.
That's all for this week's episode. Thank you to everyone for tuning in. As always, if you enjoyed it, please leave a review on your favorite social media platform and share it with your friends. And if there are any topics you'd like us to cover in the future, feel free to reach out via social media or leave a comment on our YouTube channel. See you next week when we'll be talking about walkability and public transportation in Down East Maine, including an interview with Down East Community Partners Director of Housing Services, Dale Basher. Dale is a veteran in the construction industry and a member of the Maine Climate Council, who has some valuable insights about the state of infrastructure in Down East Maine.